नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाद भूतदे श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वतदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतरणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, Verse 33. Pratapyanu srutya jananjoratam nasam yaduna bhagavadyatim chatam ekanta bhaktya bhagavatya dukshajay Naveshitatmopa rarama samsrute Bhaktya, the devotion, Bhagavati, unto the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, Adokshaje, transcendence, Naveshitatma, with full attention, Upa rarama, became released from samsrute, material existence. Translation, Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the transcendental personality of Godhead with full attention, and thus gained release from the course of material existence. Purport, the setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe only means that he is out of our sight. The end of the Yadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. As Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to prepare to go back to Godhead, so also Kunti decided. And thus, she fully engaged herself in the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, which guarantees one a passport for going back to Godhead after quitting this present material body. The beginning of devotional service to the Lord is the beginning of spiritualizing the present body, and thus, an unalloyed devotee of the Lord loses all material contact in the present body. The abode of the Lord is not a myth, as it is thought by the unbelievers or ignorant people, but one cannot reach there by any material means, like a Sputnik or space capsule. But one can certainly reach there after leaving this present body, and one must prepare himself to go back to Godhead by practicing devotional service. That guarantees a passport for going back to Godhead, and Kunti adopted it. Translation, Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the transcendental personality of Godhead with full attention, thus gained release from the course of material existence. So, here's a description of how one should prepare oneself in the absence of the Lord. The Pandavas and others were associating with the Lord for many years, and then Krishna disappeared. So in the previous verse, there was a description of Yudhisthira decided he would also prepare to leave this planet. And in this verse, we see that Kunti also decided she would leave. And, of course, this doesn't mean that everything has ended. Rather, they leave this planet and they join the Supreme Lord, Krishna. But in order to do that, one has to be qualified. So qualification in the material world is a little bit different. To go from one place to the other, you need a passport and a visa. And if you don't have that, you can't get in the country. So there's some qualification in the material world also for going places. Or as Prabhupada mentions in the purport also, if you want to go somewhere, you have need a vehicle. If you want to go to outer space, then you need a Sputnik or a spaceship or whatever. You can't go on your own without any, you know, protection or vehicle. But the destination in spiritual life is completely different, so it requires completely different qualification. You don't just need passports and visas and spaceships or whatever. That doesn't work. On the other hand, the qualification is different, but it's also easier in one sense. For making a spaceship or getting a visa or getting a passport, you have to do a lot of things and pay some money, etc. But the qualification for going to this other place, that is the spiritual world, which is further away, completely different, there's no money involved at all. There's no charge involved at all. But the qualification is a change of consciousness, a change in how the jiva thinks of himself and thinks of everything else. So the qualification for the jiva, the change that must take place so that he can enter the spiritual world is bhakti. So this verse says ekanta bhakti. And so the word ekanta means, of course, in the word for word is unalloyed bhakti. By unalloyed bhakti, ekanta. Eka means one-ended. So one-pointed devotional service. So what this means is that the bhakti or the devotion that we aim at the Supreme Lord has to be only the Supreme Lord and no one else. So that is why we often discourage worship of devatas, because then your attention is divided up. And Bhagavad Gita is called many-branched. Your intelligence becomes many-branched when you have to worship many devatas. So we see in Bhagavad Gita at the end there, Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam vraja. Surrender only to me. Mam ekam, only to one person, to me. Don't involve anybody else. So of course, there's a greater implication in this. Also, don't worship any devatas, but even don't worship any other form of the Lord. Of course, they're bona fide. Vishnu and Rama and Nrsimhadev and Matsya and Kurma are all authorized objects of worship in bhakti, but the devotee of Krishna doesn't even worship them. He worships only Krishna. He doesn't divide his attention onto other forms of the Lord. So therefore, mam ekam sharanam vraja can mean only the Supreme Lord and not devatas, but it can also mean only Krishna and not even any other form of the Lord. Because this is the message of Bhagavatam, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the final, ultimate form of God, so everybody in Kali Yuga should worship only Krishna. So, therefore, one ekanta bhakti can mean only that one Supreme Lord or only Krishna among all the forms of the Supreme Lord. But added to that, we can worship only Krishna, but we can have other desires also. I will worship Krishna, but what do I worship Krishna for? Usually we do something and we have an object of our act. We work. Why? Because we want money. What do we do with the money? We want to buy something. Or we want to get a house, or we want to eat, or whatever. So our actions have a material motive. For ourselves, we want to get something so we can support ourselves or support our family or whatever. So that's our motivation. But in performing service for the Supreme Lord, if one is doing it only for the Supreme Lord, we cannot have our interests at heart. We can only do it for the pleasure of the Lord, to please Him. And if we try to please ourselves by that act, then it is not ekanta. It is not one-pointed. So we worship the Lord, we have some nice sentiment for the Lord, but we want to get something for ourselves also. Yeah? So on the gross level, that is called karma misra bhakti. Yeah? We do devotional service, we worship the Lord, and we like bhakti, and we want to attain prema, but we also want to get some material benefits out of this. And if we don't get those material benefits, we're a little disappointed. So we worship Krishna and say, okay, I'm not getting any money, so why this process isn't working? I want to get some nice benefit or some health or something like that, because bhakti is supposed to be complete and Krishna is the Supreme Lord of everything, so why doesn't he help me get out of this material entanglement and give me some nice prosperity in the material world? So that's a type of mixed bhakti. On a higher level, of course, one could go for liberation, impersonal liberation, or get rid of my distress. One is to get material things, the other is to get rid of material distress, ultimately liberation. So I will worship Krishna to get rid of all the distresses of this material body and get liberated from birth and death. So that's also a type of mixed bhakti, jnana misra bhakti, with a desire for liberation. Then there's a higher form of mixed bhakti in one sense we can say, and that is, I will do bhakti and worship the Supreme Lord in order to go to the spiritual world. That's also a little bit mixed, because we're wanting something out of the Supreme Lord, even if it's spiritual. Spiritual, of course, to be in the spiritual world. But if that's a condition for our bhakti, then it is also mixed. Or I'll go to the spiritual world in order to get a spiritual body, to get a four-handed form like Vishnu, or to get a two-handed form in Goloka or whatever. Again, that's a condition. So these are called Salokya and Sarupya, etc. So again, it's not so good. So therefore, ekanta bhakti is defined as worshipping the Lord only to try to please the Lord. Without any desire to get anything for ourselves, even anything spiritual, like spiritual planet or spiritual body. So that is ekanta bhakti. Of course, Supreme Lord is very merciful, and he will make all arrangements for a devotee so that he can serve Krishna in the best possible way. The best possible way is to have a spiritual body in the spiritual world. So the Lord makes that arrangement for the devotees in prema, but that's not a condition under which the devotee practices. I have to get to the spiritual world and I have to get a spiritual body. That's not his condition. His condition is, let me attempt to please the Lord. Of course, we can always ask, well, how can anyone do that? How can anyone in this world have no motive at all, just do something without expecting anything back? And we can see it's not very common. People do that. And it's very difficult to do that also. But yet we do have examples like the mother caring for the child. Why does the mother feed the child? To get something for herself? So that when the child grows up, then the child will take care of her? Some parents may think like that, but a mother actually doesn't think like that at all. She does it, why? Because of affection. She serves the child because of affection, not because of getting anything for herself. So that is an example of, we can say in the material world, pure love, unmotivated love, unconditional love. But of course, the subject is the child, and the child has got a material body, and we're not thinking of the soul, we're thinking of the material body of that child also. So it's again material, but it's the best we can do in the material world as far as unmotivated, unconditional love is concerned. Now, if we direct that same type of love to the Supreme Lord, then that is what we call ekanta bhakti. We don't have any desire for ourselves, we're only doing it out of affection for Krishna. And then we have an exact analogy of Mother Yasoda or any elder gopi in the relationship with Krishna. They think of him as a child, and they try to do everything for him out of great affection only. That's all. Not trying to get anything from him. So we have the mother-child relationship. However, in the spiritual world, we have great varieties of love. So we have the friendship love and the conjugal love and the servant love. And it's all very similar. It's all expressing one's affection for Krishna without any desire of anything for oneself. Yeah. So that's the highest goal. And when we're practicing, of course, we're never pure, otherwise we would already have prema. But we're practicing to get that ekanta bhakti in the spiritual world. How can we practice it if we're impure? So it is like anything, a repetition. So we're not doing it perfectly, but yet we try to do it perfectly. We try to express unconditional love for Krishna, even though we're imperfect and we have anartas and we have material desires, etc. So that's what we call pure bhakti in sadhana. It is not really pure, but we're making an attempt to be pure. And when we perform our bhakti, we're not asking for material things, even though other times when we're not doing our bhakti, we may think of material things and we're identifying with our material body. When we're serving Krishna, then we don't ask for anything material. We're only trying to please Him, whether it's chanting or doing archana or whatever. So we call that pure bhakti, or Sudha Bhakti, or Uttama Bhakti. In nectar devotion, it's called Uttama Bhakti, the highest bhakti. So this is the basis, sadhana bhakti, which is done with that attempt to only please Krishna and not get anything for ourselves. That is called pure bhakti or Uttama Bhakti. And that is the process by which we can attain the real ekanta bhakti or the prema in the spiritual world. If we don't do this type of bhakti in sadhana, we don't get that prema. So if we mix it with other desires, then it's explained, we can do better than the karmi, who does karma yoga and goes to Swarga Loka or Brahma Loka. We get better than that because we're worshipping Krishna and we're doing mainly bhakti with a little bit of mixture. And we get better than the jnani, who can get liberation, nobody, and merge in Brahman. The mixed devotee can also use just Gyan Mr. Bhakti, can get better than that. But he cannot get this highest bhakti in the spiritual world, prema. So where does he go? Somewhere in between. So what's that in between? He can go to the spiritual world ultimately. Krishna will arrange for all of his desires to go away. But the end result is different because his sadhana was different. It was mixed sadhana. Bhakti mixed with a little bit of material desire or a desire for liberation. So what does he get? He gets sarupya, he gets salokya. He goes to the spiritual world, he gets a nice spiritual body, he gets a nice spiritual place, he gets spiritual qualities, spiritual powers. He lives in a nice palace. If you had material desires, then that's reflected in the spiritual form with lots of nice facilities in the spiritual world. And he also recognizes the Supreme Lord because he's in the spiritual world. No material desires. But his relationship with the Lord is very weak. So it's a weak form of Shantarasa. No active service, no desire for real active service. He's very content to meditate on the Lord. So this is the position of that mixed bhakti. So that is why in sadhana we have to do the ekanta bhakti or the uttama bhakti. Though it's not perfect. We do it with that desire for that pure bhakti in the spiritual world. Then that's what we attain. So in that type of, with that type of bhakti we get a very strong relationship with the Lord, because our sadhana was also attempting to get that strong relationship without other desires. So then we end up with dasya, sakya, vatsalya, or madhurya rasa with Krishna. But if we don't do that, we don't do that pure bhakti in sadhana, we don't get that. We get a dilute form of, you know, bhakti, shanta rasa with lots of distractions. So therefore the ekanta bhakti in sadhana leads to the ekanta bhakti in prema with varieties of rasas. So this, of course, is for the benefit of the jiva. We our desire is not to get anything for ourselves, just to try to please Krishna. And when that becomes perfect, it's called prema. But the result of prema is that the jiva gets the highest bliss. So the jiva is not without a result for himself in one sense. Yes, he gets the highest bliss. But the devotee is not demanding that as part of his practice or part of his sadhana. But that's what the Lord gives him, as he also gives spiritual body, spiritual place, planet, etc. he also gives the highest bliss. But the devotee doesn't want to mix those results with his bhakti and demand those results. Then it becomes a weaker type of bhakti. So therefore we say that we should do the bhakti. And what is our prayer when we're chanting Hare Krishna? Please, energy of the Lord, engage me in Krishna's service. We're not asking for something from the Lord. Please give me something. Yeah? In the material world, when people do karma yoga and they worship devatas and etc., they have explicit prayers. Give me money, give me wealth, give me sons, give me family, give me property. These are explicit prayers in Sanskrit they utter when they're praying. So a person doing pure bhakti doesn't do that. If we're doing mixed bhakti, maybe we do that. But if we're doing this pure bhakti and sadhana, we don't explicitly ask for these things from the Lord. Nor do we ask, give me a spiritual body, give me a place there, give me this, give me that, give me bliss, etc. So we simply try to please the Lord. So all the practices of this bhakti in sadhana are within this definition. Actually, the definition is given by Rupa Goswami. It's the key verse of the Nectar of Devotion. That is, Anukulina Krishna Nusilanam. To cultivate a relationship with Krishna which is favorable. Which means we're trying to please Krishna. So because demons can also cultivate a relationship with Krishna in anger or in fear or in hatred. So that's cultivating a relationship also. So Shishupal cultivates a hatred relationship, or Hiranyakasipu is cultivating a hateful relationship with Vishnu. So that's not anukulya, that's pratikulya. So Arjuna's anukulya, favorable relationship, affectionate relationship. Ultimately it means that we're trying to please Krishna. Whether he's pleased or not, that's another thing. But we're attempting to please Supreme Lord by our actions. And that is what bhakti is. So that's what affection is, even in the material world. But then the condition there is anya abhilashashta shunya. That should be devoid of any other desire. So we don't have any of the desire. We're favorable to the Lord, plus we reject all these desires for material acquisition and material pleasure, or for liberation, or for yogic powers, or whatever. We reject all of that in our sadhana. And if we do that, then we attain that position of prema, which is naturally free of all these desires, and is completely favorable for Krishna. But in sadhana, we have to do the same thing. We practice it in sadhana. So this is the main verse in the Nectar Devotion. So Nectar Devotion means, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu means an ocean of rasas of bhakti, which are very sweet. So it means prema, ultimately. But to attain that prema, then you have to do the sadhana, which is also defined by the same definition. So one definition is for sadhana, it's the same definition for prema. That is, serve Krishna favorably, cultivate the relationship with no other desire. So we try to do that in sadhana, even if it's not perfect, and we attain the perfection of that in prema. So that it's that verse is applicable to everyone practicing bhakti. If you want the ocean of nectar of bhakti rasa, then you have to practice like this. So that is why we emphasize the pure devotion or ekanta bhakti in so many places in Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So therefore it's one-pointed devotion to the Lord and not to devatas, and for us to Krishna among all the forms of the Lord and not to anyone else, and without any other desire except to please the Lord. So that is what ekanta bhakti is. So it says ekanta bhaktya bhagavati unto Bhagavan. So that excludes devatas. And here we have adokshaja, which means one who is transcendental. But there's also another meaning given by, I think, Vishnu Chakravarti, maybe Jiva Goswami also, which directly indicates Krishna among all the forms of Bhagavan. Aksha can also mean an axle, and Ada means beneath. So, and Ja means to be born or to be lying. So he was underneath the axle of the cart. So we know the story of how Krishna was underneath the cart and the axle was there, and Krishna kicked the axle and the cart crashed over and the demon got killed. So Krishna underneath the cart, Adokshaja. He broke the axle of the cart and it fell over. So it also indicates Krishna and his childhood pastimes. So therefore, one should have this pure bhakti for, or practice pure bhakti in sadhana for Krishna among all the forms of the Lord. So that's the practice for a person in the material world. Though Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam describe karma yoga and varnashram and jnana and also astanga yoga, these are all not meant for the devotees who have faith in this practice of pure bhakti. It's meant for other people. They can be done as an accessory to bhakti, so we can take elements from varnashram or jnana or yoga or whatever, as long as they don't interfere with the unmotivated love for Krishna that we're trying to express. So therefore, in that verse in the Nectar of Devotion, it also says, jnana karma jnanavratam. It is not obstructed. It should not be obstructed by karma, jnana, etc. You could practice parts of it, but it shouldn't obstruct the bhakti in any way. Yeah? So we don't obstruct the bhakti by doing karma yoga or varnashram and mixing material desires in it, or worshipping devatas, etc. We may do elements of varnashram which are favorable for regulating our body and our mind. We have to be clean, for instance, so our rules of cleanliness come from the varnashramic rules. Our rules for raising families come from the varnashramic rules. We have samskaras, comes from the varnashramic system. How to relate with other people in terms of respect, a lot of that comes from varnashram system. Respect for the government, the kings, comes from varnashram system, etc. Relationship with other living entities, compassion for other living entities, that also comes from varnashram system. So we have no objection to any of that. It's also favorable for bhakti, so we follow those elements of the varnashram system and karma yoga, but we reject those elements which are unfavorable, like worship of devatas, trying to get to Svarga Loka and get material benefits. We reject all of that part. So, in this way, the devotee practices devotion. So a personality like Kunti, of course, is already a Nityasiddha devotee. So like Narada Muni, like the Pandavas and others, she's more or less making an example for us because she's already perfect. So her decision to give up this material world and whatever is, like it says, Uparama Samsarte, she gave up this material world. She never was in the material world anyway. Just like Krishna's not in the material world, the Pandavas are not in the material world, she was never in the material world also. Because she's part of Krishna's eternal pastimes. And it's also explained that when Krishna disappears from this planet, then he goes to another universe and he's performing the pastime. And there is Kunti, and there are the Pandavas, there are the cowherd boys, they're all performing the pastime there also. So they're always engaged in serving Krishna somewhere in some universe. So they're never within the material world in the negative sense of being bound up by material consciousness. They're within the universe, definitely, in one universe or another universe, but their consciousness is not part of this universe at all. They're not bound by the laws of karma and by ignorance. They're completely in prema, fixed in prema, so they can never be affected by the material world. So just as the Supreme Lord is free from any material influence or contamination or karma at any time, even the jiva who is weak and small and just a little particle, if he attains prema, then he gets like the Lord. He's also untouched by material energy. He cannot be touched by it. Nothing can touch him.
Because he's got that prema. So it is described in Paramatma-siddhārtha there that the jivas, the nitya-siddhas, are like the jivas in the material world, because they're all little particles of consciousness. They're all servants of the Lord. And they never change that position, even if they're nitya-siddhas or sadhana-siddhas or whatever. The jiva's a jiva. You cannot change and become Supreme Lord at any point. But there is a little difference between the two. That is the nitya-siddha jiva, or the jiva who sadhana-siddha, they have a little difference from the jivas in the material world. And what is that? The chit-shakti of the Lord, the internal energy of the Lord. A little bit of that is also in the jiva, permanently, gets fixed in the jiva. So he's different from the jivas in the material world, the prema. So bhakti and prema are part of the internal energy of the Lord, and a portion of that gets fixed in the jiva and prema and never leaves that jiva. So therefore, he's eternally with the Lord after that point, whether he's nitya-siddha or even a sadhana-siddha. So they come in the material world with the Lord, and they're not affected by material energy, just like the Supreme Lord is not affected by anything in this material world. This is, of course, the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So the jivas get a very high position. They're almost like the Supreme Lord. And in fact, in prema, the jivas control the Lord. The Lord is independent, supreme independent. That's his definition. Nobody above the Lord. But in prema, the jiva becomes superior to the Lord. Controls the Lord, like Mother Yasoda controls Krishna. And control him with a stick. And so, or the gopis control Krishna, or the cowherd boys control Krishna, and they defeat him when they fight with him, and wrestle with him, and play games with him. They defeat him, they punish him. So, in other words, in the spiritual world, the Lord is so merciful to the devotees that there's very little distinction between the devotee and the Supreme Lord, even though the jiva is always a small particle of consciousness. Somehow, he becomes greater than the Supreme Lord, even, and because he controls Krishna through prema. So this is another aspect of mercy and greatness of Supreme Lord, that he will do this for his devotee. So anyway, for the people who are not on this level, like Kunti, people doing sadhana bhakti, then we follow a similar process, and we do this pure bhakti and sadhana in order to get to that position where one eternally accompanies the Lord in all of his pastimes, either in the material world or in the spiritual world. So this can act as an inspiration for us. Okay, any question?
You mentioned like akanta bhakti can also mean not to focus on any other form of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's a distinction between the form of Lord Chaitanya and what...
Okay. That's exceptional case. he's also Swayam Bhagavan like Krishna. He's like him. He is Krishna. But then he takes the mood of Radha. So he's that little difference. But we can say he's non-different. So in order to approach Radha Krishna, we must also worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We cannot separate them.
In the conditional life, the prema isn't there in the heart yet. It has to come, prema can only come when you are qualified.
Yeah, yeah.
And it enters by the mercy of God.
Yeah.
So in conditional life, you don't actually have love, like it's not.
Yes, we can say it's potential.
Potential.
And of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there Lord Chaitanya says, the seed of bhakti is planted, then it grows. The gardener, we're the gardener, and we cultivate it with hearing and chanting, and the little plant begins to sprout little leaves, and then it grows up and grows. Then it gets flowers in the form of bhava. Then it gets the fruit in terms of prema. Mm-hmm. Finally, so that manifests from the seed. And that seed is planted by Guru and Krishna. So that they inspire us to do the bhakti, and then we start the bhakti. And that bhakti is the shakti of the Lord. It's actually the samvit and hladini shaktis of Krishna. But it doesn't really manifest hladini and samvit until we get to bhava stage. But it's eternally part of Krishna in the spiritual world, and part of the devotees in the spiritual world.
You said that to avoid doing things in order to get things out of them, or doing things for other people to get things out of them. So, is that in terms of like materially? So, I don't want to do this favor for someone, but so avoiding saying I will do this favor for someone, so they'll do a favor for me.
Uh-huh.
So that's to be avoided. But I was just wondering, because I'm, whenever I try and do good deeds for people, because it makes them feel nice and makes them feel happy. Like,
yeah,
if someone, you know, is now upset at the tent or,
yeah,
you know, wanted some food, like, I do that for them,
yeah,
not expecting them to give me something back, but because it makes them feel happy. Is that the same as,
So we have two types of people who will do charity work or are compassionate. Some people expect something back. That's not real charity, because they're expecting, I'll do this for you, but I'm expecting something back. I'll give you some money, but I expect something back from you. Well, that's not real charity. So we do some unconditionally, then we do it, and we don't expect anything from it. Of course, by doing acts like that, we get some, what is called punya. We get good karma. So that elevates us in the material world, birth after birth, and we become purer and purer, but we're still stuck in a material body. That's the problem. But it elevates us to a higher level of consciousness in the material world.
So it's material gain to be avoided.
If we're doing these acts of charity, we're not looking for something for ourselves. Yeah, yeah. Selfless acts of charity are better than motivated charity. So there's a difference between rajagun and sattvagun. And Rajagun, we do things, even religious acts, but we're trying to get something for ourselves. Well, we see that in the Western world often. People are very religious in one sense because, and they do charity works for the church and whatever, but they're trying to get some fame out of that, you know, so that's motivated. Or they give to universities to get their name on the plaque or whatever like this. So this is all motivated type of, or they're doing it to avoid taxes maybe. I don't know. So they have many, many motives for doing their charity work. But they do it just as a charity because it's, we want to help people, then fine, then that's sattvic.
Yeah.
Of course, it's also enforced, like in India, there's a tax, a kind of a tax. You have to spend a certain amount of money, big companies over a certain amount of millions of dollars, they have to give a certain amount for charitable works. And there's a list of charitable works, and you have to give that money there, so they're forcing them to be charitable in one sense. But maybe they have the motives behind that also, the companies, yeah.
Sometimes we hear that, we're told that our internal relationship with Krishna is fixed and specific. But reflecting on what you're saying, according to our mixed sadhana, we space out within our nothing.
Does that mean
our sadhana dictates our relationship ultimately, or is it something that's fixed?
Yeah. From one point of view, yes. We do, if you worship, let's say, Rama, for many lifetimes, and finally, what you attain the spiritual world, you would expect to achieve Rama in the spiritual world, not Nishirma Day. Suddenly, you wake up in the spiritual world Sunday when you got prema and you got a different form in front of you. You go, well, who are you? I want Rama. You know, so it's natural that what you concentrate on, you achieve. The example is given of the bug that gets trapped into the wasp puts him in a little cocoon or something like that, and he's in fear. The little bug is in fear of the wasp. And when he comes out, he becomes a wasp. So by concentrating on one form, you become like that. Like Shishupala concentrates on Vishnu, and then he becomes a four-handed form in the spiritual world, like Vishnu, you know? So that's the general thing, that whatever you concentrate on, you become like that. So you do bhakti for Krishna, then you attain Krishna. You do bhakti for Rama, you get Rama. Do bhakti for Vishnu, you get Vishnu. From the Krishna's point of view, we can say it's eternal, that's what you're supposed to get anyway. But from our point of view, we had to practice in a certain way to get a certain goal.
I'd like to be really honest. I think it's a really hard call to be able to just focus on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that I have to, you know, maintain some of these things, and I'm so, my heart might become really hard because I'm just like wanting to focus on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, this can you inspire us? I'm not getting inspired, so Maharaj, can you please help me to know how we can?
Well, there are different types of devotees. I think in Brahma Sutras, Balavidyarushan describes some people worship one form, some worship several or many forms. So it's also permissible. But then the result is, in their bhakti, if they get prema with that many forms, and they got a little bit of devotion for a little bit of prema for everybody, whereas the one who does only for one, they get big frame for that deity. So you have a little bit of frame for everybody. So the relationships are ultimately a little weaker, that's all. But there can be that position where one has many types of realizations of different forms of the Lord also. It's also there.
What about wanting to please Krishna, but you still having to maintain so many things?
Desires in the material world? Or
just family. You have a situation.
Oh, that's part of the material world. As long as we're in the material world, we got a material body, and we may have, and for Mary, we have material relationships with family members, so there's duties within that. That's part of the Varnashram system. And we have to maintain those duties, unless we're completely renounced and sannyasis or sannyasinis or whatever. Then we do have to fulfill those duties. So according to our qualification, we have to do acts, and we may have to do that according to Varnashram system. So we have duties to fulfill. And it's not forbidden also, that one can partake of different duties in different ashrams like that. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for instance, so he had like 13 children or something. He was doing his magistrate work and going here and there, and government sent him to all sorts of places like this, and he was doing that. Plus he was doing his bhakti, and there was no real contradiction for him. Of course, he had rather do the bhakti than the other work, but he had to support his family, so he did that. And at a certain point, then he gave up everything. And,
So can you that bhakti, is that
which part?
The bhakti, the real, because you're doing all those things to maintain your family or whatever, but
yeah.
I want to know that focus on bhakti, more about that.
The bhakti part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I said, it's qualification, so if you are a householder, then you have to do both things, maintain the family and do your bhakti. And it's not criticized, Lord Chaitanya said, whether you're a householder or a sannyasi, chant the holy name, do bhakti. And you can get success either way. So one chooses a path according to qualification. And if we follow the duties of whichever path we take, sannyas or vanaprastha or grihastha or brahmacharya, we follow that path correctly, then we can get perfection by doing that. Of course, ultimately, if we get prema, then we're detached from everything. But still, one would do one's duties within those particular ashram. They have to be related to each other. The two have to be there. If it's only the external, not the internal, then it's not bhakti also. It's a show of bhakti. Yeah. So we have to have that internal aspect at all times.
Maharaj, you see the word is very interesting in Kavacha.
Mm-hmm.
I heard arguments from the way you say, we don't need to lay this because we want to be Krishna.
Yes, ultimately everything, Krishna, everything, and so we don't need any other protection except Krishna, whatever like that. But we see that even Prabhupada, he advised the devotees in Los Angeles when he got sick, okay, you worship Nrisimhadeva, that's why we were chanting Nrisimhadeva prayers every morning now, because of that. That started with, in L.A., they started chanting the prayers of Nrisimhadeva and worshiping Nrisimhadeva, so Prabhupada would get rid of his sickness or whatever like that. So, but for particular purposes, we may worship other forms of the Lord, so that's better than worshiping, devatas or anything like that. So we just worship for certain purposes. That's also allowed, as I said. But, we shouldn't distract from our main object of worship. So Lord Chaitanya says, worship Radha Krishna. So we have Radha Krishna as the main deities in most temples for that reason.
Yeah.
How do we balance that? Well, we can't just worship devotees and not worship Krishna, because the devotees are worshiping Krishna, so we have to give the respect for Krishna. But the idea of that statement is to mean that the only way we can advance is by sadhu sangha and giving respect to the devotees and getting proper knowledge and inspiration from the devotees. If we don't follow the proper path, then we don't get the proper results. So we do have to go through the parampara system and follow the devotees. Otherwise, again, we can't get to Krishna. But those devotees are worshipping Krishna, and we should also worship and follow their example and follow their instructions.
Just wondering if it is mentioned somewhere in the scriptures, what is Pandava's eternal spiritual form?
The same. Yudhisthira's Yudhisthira, or Arjuna's Arjuna.
Are they always in the so-called business trip, traveling, you know, with Krishna in different universes? Or?
Yeah. They'll always be there with Krishna. Yeah. And in the spiritual world also. Yeah. With Kshatriya forms.
Is it asking for in the spiritual world also?
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah.
My question was that the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are always continuing and that we are in the pastimes. What happens? Yeah, we are in the pastimes and these will continue. I can't quite conceptualize exactly what happens here. I mean, he doesn't appear all the time.
Well, like Krishna's pastimes, and other avatars' pastimes also, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are also eternal, and whenever Krishna has his pastimes, and right after that, Lord Chaitanya has the same pastimes in that universe or whatever. Yes, from universe to universe, so all of us devotees will go with them in those pastimes. If we're only doing sadhana now, of course, we can't join those pastimes, but when we get prema, then we can join into those pastimes also. But simultaneously, those pastimes are in the spiritual world as well. They're taking place in the spiritual world and within the material universe, or many material universes. Okay. Hare Krishna.